So, anyway, that's the deal. We are in Nehemiah chapter 6. I know some of you think we'll never leave Nehemiah. You have the gift of prophecy. We won't. I promise you have entered a twilight zone where we preach on Nehemiah all the time, nonstop. We are in Nehemiah chapter 6. If you have this Bible, if you find this Bible, then Nehemiah is floating around. There are Bibles floating around. You can grab them. And Nehemiah is on, let me give you what page it is. Okay. Nehemiah chapter 6 is on page 359. So we're going to be covering Nehemiah chapter 6, starting in verse 15. So, I'll catch you up as we go through the chapter with the story. So I'm just going to throw you into the story. If you don't know anything about Nehemiah, you're just going to jump right in. So Nehemiah chapter 6 verse 15 starts this way. So the wall was completed on the 12th or the 25th of Elul in 52 days. The wall was completed in 52 days. I don't know if any of you have had that sense of completion, you know, like when you start a project and then you finish it and you're like, oh, that's nice. Just recently, Julie and Keith rearranged their bedroom. Now, for those of you who don't know who Julie and Keith are, I live in a community house and they are the other couple that lives in the house with us. So there's 9 of us in 3,000 square feet. I think they should do like some cable show about us. But anyway, their TV broke. And so about a month ago, the TV was at the place where you hit it and it kind of pops up and you can use it. And about a couple days ago, I hear this like banging over and over again in Keith and Julie's room. And then Julie comes out and says, do you have any idea how to fix this thing? Some of you might say that's idol worship, but we won't talk about that. Anyway, they decided that they would break down and get another one. And so they rearranged their room and cleaned it up and, you know, moved the furniture. So I walk in there, and I don't know, I just have this thing where I walked in their room, and I'm like, oh, I just like to stay here. This, it feels new. It feels, that sense of completion. And that, I don't know, maybe you have it, for those of you who've gone to college, you know, when you had to write that 50-page paper, and you thought, I don't have enough words in my life to write 50 pages, so you decide I'm going to use APA style, and that's going to be 1.5. Maybe I'll add a little 5 there. Margins, and then it's double spaced, and I can make it a little further than double spaced. And amazingly, somehow you get 50 pages when really it's only 1 page single spaced, but you stretched it with lots of diagrams and you feel complete. Oh, I did it, right? Well, this is where this is where Nehemiah is. 52 days he builds a wall with all these people that's almost 3 miles long. It's 15 feet high. I don't remember how many feet wide it is, but it's quite a project. And he's done it in 52 days. What I'd like to do today is take what Nehemiah has to say and kind of lay it over the passage, a passage in Colossians. Because here's the deal. You and I, we've decided as a church and as a community that we wanted to be a place that, and the way we follow Jesus offers healing to our friends and the community here and to the outside world. And so when we talk about healing, we talk about helping each other deal with our debt, seeing our marriages renewed and working on those, dealing with our addictions, dealing with our apathy, dealing with our depression, changing the way we view singleness, stop being lazy. We got all these things that we need to work on. Or for some of us, maybe healing looks like just getting out of being stuck. You know, do you ever feel like, I'm just stuck? The reality is that if we set our minds to, I'm going to deal with my depression, or I'm going to deal with the things in my marriage, I guarantee you, if you just set your mind to work on something in your life, you're going to fail. And you're not going to succeed. And it's not going to work for you. If you decide that you're going to do it, it won't work. So if you think about where Nehemiah was, he gets news from his brother that the city that he is far away from, because he's the cupbearer to the king of a foreign country, is a mess. It's been destroyed for 140 years. The people in it are very anxious. There's a whole bunch of chaos. When he gets there, things are crazy. Then all the people who don't want the city to be built are mocking him and threatening him. And 52 days, he builds a wall that keeps them safe. So they move from a place of utter chaos to a place where they can feel safe. And I would suggest to you that when you decide to face things in your life, when you decide to really pursue healing in your life, that it does start out feeling like chaos. And you cannot heal unless you are in a safe place. You cannot heal unless you're in a safe place. In John 19, 30, Jesus has lived out his life, and he's on the cross, and he utters one of the most important phrases of all eternity. And that phrase is, "It is finished. It is completed." Jesus finished something that transforms anybody who embraces it. And what I'd like you to offer you is exactly what that looks like. Because if we're going to be people who are healed people, then we have to understand what exactly Jesus completed. What exactly could Jesus step back from and say, "It is finished"? What the cross does for us. So if you have a Bible, you can turn to Colossians. In this Bible, it's on 875. The Colossians, verse 16 of chapter 1. The writer is Paul. He's one of the apostles. You know, the Apostles' Creed. And it goes like this. This is speaking of Jesus. "For by him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he might have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have all fullness dwell in him." That's important. All fullness of God dwells in Jesus, and it goes on. "And through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. Once you were alienated from God and were enemies in your mind because of your evil behavior, but now he has reconciled you by Christ's physical body through death to present you holy in his sight, without blemish and free from accusation." Here's the deal, and this is the important thing. The cross of Jesus is Nehemiah's wall for you and me. For you and I to be in a place where we can deal with our debt, deal with all of these issues that we talk about in our life, the things that we struggle with, we have to realize what the cross does for us. We have to understand what happens. So what does this passage say? This passage says that the cross reconciled you and me. And what it's done for us is made us people who are holy. So if you decide to be a follower of Jesus, and if you can imagine Nehemiah's wall as the cross, then you sit inside of this wall as someone who is holy, and as someone who is without blemish, and someone who is spotless. So the issue then becomes, if you were a follower of Jesus, you operate out of an identity of holiness. And what the problem is that when we decide to work on our debt, when we decide to work on different things in our lives, those become our identity, right? Those are the things. We're someone who spends too much money. We're someone who's shut down in our marriage. We're someone who's just lazy and can't figure out how to do anything. Our things that seem to hold on to us define us. But what Jesus says is, no, no, no. You have an identity because of what I've done on the cross to be holy. You are holy. You are without spot. Nobody can say anything against you. No one can say you're a debtor. No one can say you're a person who's got a screwed up marriage. That's who you are. That's your identity. Now, let me just offer you what Nehemiah offers us out of this. But last week, Rod talked to us about the enemy, right? And he was talking a lot about Satan. And I would like to just build up a theology of the enemy for you very quickly so you understand what the wall of the cross does for you. So we sang the song Romans 12, right? Romans 12, 1 and 2 basically says our objective in life is to renew our minds. And the reason that we have to renew our minds is one of our enemies is the world and the world's value system. And we could sit here and talk about the value system of the world, right? If I asked you, what makes a person valuable in our culture? You would say, money, youth, beauty. Yell them out at me. Power, which is often called popularity, and often you get it when you die. A billion people worship you. Right? What other things? What is it, if you're a woman in our culture, what makes you valuable? Thin and sexy. What else? What's that? Productive. What if you're a guy? What does the culture say? What do you wrestle with? What makes you valuable in this culture if you're a man? Big muscles. Accomplishments. All of these things are an enemy. And this is why Paul says in Romans we have to renew our mind. Is that the culture is constantly telling us who we are. From what we watch on TV, to all of the billboards that we look at, to what our friends tell us is valuable about us. The culture is constantly pushing and trying to define us. And if you're a follower of Jesus, you're always bumping up against these value systems. So that's one of the enemies that we face. The other one that Rod particularly talked about last week is the spiritual enemy. And in Ephesians chapter 6, Paul talks about the enemy. And he says that this is a spiritual enemy, and it's not the kings and the princes of the world, but it's Satan and his minions. And the thing that Satan uses, and Revelation tells us this, is that Satan is an accuser and a liar. And so what will happen when you say, I'm going to work on my debt, you will begin to hear a process of lies about who you are. You just are impulsive. You'll never be able to get out of debt. You know, if you're in a marriage and you're saying, well, I want to be more intimate with my husband or wife, and Satan will say, well, your husband, he doesn't really like you. He doesn't like this about you. Constantly, you will hear lies about who you are. That's the second enemy that you face. And if you think about the story of Nehemiah, he's had these two enemies, right? He's had this enemy named, not Tobiah, but the other two. Sambalot and the Geshem the Arab. Those two guys have pushed hard like that, threatening to kill him, threatening who he was, saying that he was trying to become king. He's had all of those attacks. But now he's built a wall. And here's the important thing about this wall. And that is that Nehemiah is now saved. And listen to what he says. It was marked with my Bible. Chapter 6. It says this. Verse 16. When all our enemies heard about this, all the surrounding nations were afraid and lost their self-confidence because they realized that their work had been done with the help of our God. First thing is I love about Nehemiah is he says, we built this wall in 52 days, and he doesn't stand up there like Nebuchadnezzar and say, I did this. He said, we built this wall with God's help. God helped us build it. And because of that, everybody lost hope. They decided they can't attack us. And if you think about it, if you're a follower of Jesus, the cross does the same thing for you. Before the cross, Satan and the world can define you and who you are. But after the cross, there is no way for Satan and the world to tell you who you are, because you are holy and blameless and spotless and beyond accusation. And you have to stand in that identity. But Nehemiah goes on in his battle, and he says this, also in those days, the nobles of Judah were sending many letters to Tobiah, and replies from Tobiah kept coming to them. For many in Judah were under oath to him, since he was the son-in-law of Shechaniah, son of Erha, and son of Johanan. This guy, if you're a parent expecting a child, do not name him Johanan, because he'll go to school in kindergarten, they'll say, what's your name? And you'll say, Johanan, and they'll joke. Had married the daughter of Meslam, son of Berechiah. Moreover, they kept reporting to me his good deeds and telling him what I said, and Tobiah sent letters to intimidate me. Tobiah is the third enemy. Romans 6:6 tells us, basically, that we have this sinful flesh, and that on the cross, God killed that. Okay? So you were a sinful being, and then when you follow Jesus, you're not dead anymore, you're alive. But what Paul has in the back of his mind is, and you've heard, some of you have heard me talk about this, is a Roman tradition. And that Roman tradition is when a murderer is caught and they have the body of the person they murdered, they strap that dead person to the live person and they throw them in jail to rot and die. And so Paul has this in his mind because that's the experience that you and I have, right? And this is who Tobiah is. See, Tobiah is a Jewish guy who's married in. So Tobiah is, in some ways, represents our dead flesh. And all of us have this. And it, you know, so we don't even need Satan. We don't need the world. We have ourselves to sin. And here's how you can tell about this. Because what's happened with these nobles is they've made oaths. And they've made agreements with Tobiah. And so one of these guys that Tobiah's married in here is one of the guys who helped build the wall and oversee it. He's a noble. And yet he's also married himself to this instigator. He's attached to him. It's kind of like if you have sex, you will get a child eventually, most likely. And you're stuck with that child. No matter if you want to get rid of it, if you want to say, that's not my child. Yes, it is. That child dies, it's still your child. There is no way that you can suck your DNA out of it. You're stuck with it. And in a lot of ways, that's the way this period of time in life, for those of us who are following Jesus, that's what we experience. We experience this thing where we make deals all the time. And we have little oaths. And they begin to affect us and affect the people around us. Let me give you an example. Daniel Wiebedo and I were out having lunch. And we like to go to Chipotle. I love Chipotle because right now it's probably the economy restaurant. Because for $2, I can get a taco and I can make those little ladies fill that taco as full as one of those burritos. Only I pay $2. And they're happy to dump the stuff on there for me, right? So I pay $2 for this taco. And then I ask them for water. Now, I go there at least 3 times a week, so that's like $6. You know, that's a big expenditure. But anyway, Daniel and I were out eating, and we both get water cups. And I notice as we both with our water cups go to the soda fountain and fill them with soda. And then we go sit down. Now I'm confessing that I'm a stealer right here. I rob things. All right? So we sit down, and he begins to drink his Coke. And I said, so what's your justification? And he says, well, here's what I think. Coke doesn't cost people that much money. It's a, you know, they make tons of money off of it. Why not? It's a small cup. And I'm like, well, let me give you my justification. My justification is that I eat here so much and I pay these people so much money, $6, maybe even $8 a week, that I should get free soda. Right? Well, one, I mean, you can say, whoa, that the witness of a pastor is going down the drain right now. But also, this is how it works in our lives. This flesh, these Tobias in our lives, is that when you start justifying your behavior, you know that you have made agreements with someone. You've begun to justify your behavior. And we all have these. This happens in marriage all the time and in our close friendships where we're like, okay, I do not want you to deal with this issue in my life, so I promise you that I won't, you know, talk to you about your issue. And so we have these unspoken agreements. Oh, we tell our friends about our wife or our husband, or we tell our friends about the other friend, but we won't talk to them because we don't want them to talk to us. So we have all of these deals. The only problem is it begins to affect the way we relate to each other. Even the justification for soda and stealing, it affects my witness, it affects my ability to disciple and offer anything to Daniel, because there we are stealing together. All of us have these Tobias. Now here's the interesting thing about the way Nehemiah deals with this, is that he just mentioned that it's happening. He says, hey, it's happened. We have this problem inside the walls, and his name is Tobiah. Well, you're going to find out that Tobiah is going to bother Nehemiah after he gets so mad that he just starts beating him up. And that's who Nehemiah is, but we'll get there. But for here, he just says, this is how life is, guys. This is what I live with. And here's what I think, if you want to begin the process of healing, if you want to talk about, okay, I'm in debt, or okay, I'm just stuck in life, the best thing to do is say, okay, I'm in debt. It's to say it. It's to confess it. This is Nehemiah's journal, and he just says, this is the way things are. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. Tobiah's intimidating me. Tobiah's going to be a problem. So what I would ask you to think about as you go out this week, as I've asked you a lot of questions when I speak, is who's the Tobias in your life? What things are you justifying and feel real comfortable with? What are you justifying in your life? Oh, this is okay. It's okay for me to do this. You know, it's okay for me to have that extra piece of bread. It's okay for me to eat 5 meals instead of 3. We can keep going. But I want you to think about that and pray about it. So Nehemiah's old journal continues in chapter 7. After the wall had been rebuilt, and I had set the doors in place, the gatekeepers and the singers and the Levites were appointed, I put in charge of Jerusalem my brother Hanani, along with Hananiah, the commander of the citadel, because he was a man of integrity and feared God more than most men do. I said to them, the gates of Jerusalem are not to be opened until the sun is hot. And we all know about that. While the gatekeepers are still on duty, have them shut the doors and bar them. Also appoint residents of Jerusalem as guards, some at their posts and some near their own houses. Now the city was large and spacious, but there were few people in it, and the houses had not yet been rebuilt. Here's the deal. If you jump over to Colossians, General Electric Power Company, if you're looking for it. He says this is our identity, but then he continues. Okay, he says we're holy, we're blameless, we're free from accusation. If you continue in your faith, established firm, not moving from the hope held out in the gospel. This is the gospel that you heard and that has been proclaimed to you, to every creature under heaven, and to which I, Paul, have become a servant. Here's the deal. Jesus is the walls. And if you step in, if you say, I want to be a follower of Jesus, you step into a place of safety. And here's what I like about Nehemiah. He builds walls and he says, God did it. When you and I step inside the walls of the cross, we can't say, I'm without accusation because of me, because of what I've done. I am without accusation because of what Christ did on the cross and because of the blood he spilled for me. So the first thing, if you want to step into healing and if you want to be a community that's healing, is that you need to be willing to understand that it's not about you, it's about Jesus. And it's about what Jesus did. And it's about what Jesus has completed. But the second thing is you need to own up. Like Nehemiah, you just need to own up to your issues. You don't need to get them fixed. You just need to own them. You know, some of the deepest relationships I've had are the places when I've said, this is what my problem is. This is just what I'm struggling with. This is what feels heavy to me. This is what I can't get around. It doesn't even have to be big. I'll be utterly vulnerable here for you guys and promote the married group if you're interested. The way the village works is we have a bunch of open groups, and then every year or so we have these closed groups that we start. And one of them is a marriage group. And this week in the marriage group, what I said to everybody was, we're going to take 10 minutes, go off with your spouse, and ask the question, what is it that we want to bring to this group to have them help us walk through? What is it that we want to have different about our marriage? And so Sue and I came, and you know, because we're the leaders, often we don't end up on the hot seat, so we decided to be in the hot seat. And one of the things that we said was that we're just real tired, and it's hard for us to romantically engage, because what happens when the kids go to bed, and it's partly a stage of life, is that we're like kind of just like, ugh, you know, and that there's romance just isn't there. And so we said, help us think through this. Now, there are a lot of other issues underneath that. But here's the deal. That was really freeing for us. And, you know, everybody said lots of things and asked lots of questions. And it wasn't that all the things that they even said were helpful. But it was really freeing for them to know me and to know Sue, to be known. And part of healing is a willingness to be known. Not a willingness to be known by everyone. Simply being willing to be known by people whom you trust and who are around you, or people maybe you should trust but you don't. Here's the second thing, though. Okay, so you acknowledge things, but it says in Colossians there's this if, and it's not about losing your salvation if you continue in your faith and somehow you lose it in a drawer somewhere and you can't find it. But what he's saying is if you continue to believe, if you continue to act, and that you believe in the hope, well, these are acting things. Faith is something, is acting on a belief. And hope is acting, is believing in here, the gospel. It's hoping that the gospel is true. If you step into that, you can begin this process of healing. You can hang on to your identity. You cannot lose it. And I think Nehemiah gives us some clues into that. First thing Nehemiah does is he appoints guys to stand at the gates. Here's the deal. Satan cannot attack your identity. The world has no way of telling you who you are because you're in Christ. But the cross and what the cross has done for you can be weakened. And so the first thing that Nehemiah does is stick people at the gates so people can't come in. The second thing that Nehemiah does is he appoints Levites and singers. He appoints worshipers. Now here, I'm not completely sure. Most likely, these are just worshipers at the gates of the temple and guards at the gates of the temple. And I couldn't find this, but I read this somewhere once, that when Nehemiah appointed these people, it started a tradition that these singers weren't just at the gates of the temple, but they were at every gate. They were with the guards. So there was the sense that as you went in and out, you were hearing the worship of God. You were reminded of why you did what you did. You were reminded about who God was. And what I would say is one of the best ways to find healing and to offer healing to people around you is to come and sweat it out on Sunday night here. To have sweat drip in your eyes and burn your eyes and be here and worship God. Because part of healing is being reminded about why we do what we do, who Jesus is, what he's done for us, what he's called us into. Because gathering together gives us a chance to strengthen one another, to be honest with one another, and to be reminded. And worship and singing through history has helped people understand who they are. The words that are said in the songs and the songs and the tunes that they're put to help us remind us about who we are. So what I would suggest to you is, if you neglect coming here, and I'm not trying because I'm the pastor, I'm like, come to church, please, please. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying what God says is that you should be here. You should gather, right? Well, the last thing that Nehemiah does, or the next two things, and because we're hot, I'm going to close real soon, guys. But here's, there you go. Because I don't know how long I can stand here. But here's the deal. These two are really important to me. One is that he appoints all of these leaders. He delegates, and he says, "Here's you. These guys are going to guard the gates, and I'm going to put these guys in charge." Part of healing is being willing to submit. Now, when I'm saying submit to your leaders, I am not saying that when they say jump, you jump. And when they say roll over, you roll over. And when they say speak, you speak. And they throw you treats. That's not what I'm talking about. It's submission. What I'm talking about submission is that as a leader, the burden of leadership is to help you face your sin and help the church move out in its mission. And so if you're going to be healed, part of your job is to submit yourself to leadership. Be willing to say, okay, what is the leader asking me to do in my life? What do I need to change? What is God calling us to do? What are they saying that God's calling us to do? But here's the other one that I really like, is that he says, do not open the gates till it gets so stinking hot that the armies out there ain't going to do anything, because they're all going to be dehydrated, right? He basically said, let them all sweat it out there. I will not read it to you for the sake of time, but go to Mark chapter 13. Mark chapter 13 is near the end of Jesus' ministry, and the disciples come to him and they say, what's going to happen in the end? What's going to happen? And instead of telling them what's going to happen way, way at the end of things, he tells them what's going to happen to them in the next 40 years. And he keeps saying, be on your guard. Be on lookout. Be hyper vigilant. Vigilant. Constant vigilance is part of healing. See, most of us, when we start the healing process, are going to face our own sin. We're going to face the world saying, that's not a good idea. And we're going to face Satan saying, you can't do it. And we're going to give up. And what Nehemiah is saying, we just built a wall. And we don't have time to deal with the people outside of the wall because we've got no houses. So shut the doors and let them sweat it out till it's too hot for them to pick up their swords. Then we'll open the doors. And I think in our faith, if you want to continue in your faith in the hope of the gospel, then you need to be willing to come and worship. You need to be willing to submit yourself. And you need to be willing to be vigilant. You need to be vigilant about what Satan says about you, because he always says something particular about you. There are lies that you hear in your head about who you are, what you do, why you're valuable, why you're not. The world kind of pushes on those. And then you've got all of this baggage, all those Tobias that you're dragging around. So, here's the simple thing that I want you to hear tonight. First, you have a great identity. You need to hold on to it. Jesus died for you. He says that you moved from darkness, from the world of dark to the world of light. You were a person who was lost, and now you're a person who's found. If you want that, I invite you to follow Jesus tonight. But if you are a follower of Jesus, you have this great identity that you need to hold on to, because all the things you struggle with do not define you. They aren't you. But that doesn't mean you get to be lazy and, okay, fine, I'm not defined by anything. Out of gratitude, you say, all right, I'm going to come, I'm going to worship, I'm going to face these issues. I'm going to be vigilant. So, with that, I'm just going to spend a few moments and close, and then we're going to spend a little bit of singing, and because we're ending early, food will be a little late, but let's just spend a little time praying. And all I'm going to do is just take a few minutes, have you close your eyes, and I want you to think about, what are the Tobias in my life? What are those sodas that I'm justifying stealing? Right? What are those things I have in my marriage, with money, and then I'll close in prayer. Dear God, we come before you and we just thank you that you died on the cross for us and that you rose from the dead, that you, that your blood paid the price for our sin. I just thank you for that. Thank you that I am spotless and I am without accusation because of you, and that gives me the freedom to work on my issues and my sin and to offer Jesus to other people. So Lord, I just pray as we spend time singing and eating together, that you would be amongst our conversations, that we would be honest people and willing to search and not just willing to give answers to everything, that you would give us wisdom again. I ask that all in your name, Jesus. Amen. Couple ways to respond tonight to the Word of God. One is through offering. If you're visiting with us, we are just happy to have you. You don't need to give anything. If the last person would put it under their chair or next to their chair, that would be great. If you would try to make sure it hits everybody, being that we don't have ushers, you'll sort of be usher if you grab the basket. The other way to respond tonight is through communion. And here at the Village, communion really is the place where we as individuals come forward and say, I stand with Jesus' body broken and his blood poured out for me. If that's something that you can't say, then we would ask that you not do that. But if you really would like to be there, then come up and make that announcement in front of the community and break the bread and dip it into the wine and remember. And so on the night that Jesus was betrayed, he was having Passover and he took the bread and he broke it. And he said, this is my body broken for you. Take and eat in remembrance of me. And at the end of the meal, he picked up one of the wine glasses. And for those of you who have issues with wine, this is the glass of wine. The others have grape juice. But he held up that glass and he said, this is my blood, the blood of the new covenant, the blood spilled for your sins, the blood that pays for your sins. Take and drink in remembrance of me. If you can do that, then as we spend time just listening to music and singing together, you can come up as group or as individuals. There's some over there, there's some here, and take that bread and dip it in the juice. So what we're going to do is just spend a little time listening to music, and then we'll sing and eat together.